I'm ready.
Hey, welcome to the Court of Three podcast. Lisa and I are very, very thankful for each of you for subscribing and for listening in. And speaking of what we're thankful for, before I ask Lisa what she's thankful for, I was going to share a few things about what I'm thankful for. And these four things are really more about organizations that I'm a part of, that Lisa is a part of. And these four organizations are critical to me as an individual. They are critical to my spiritual growth. They're critical to my physical health. They're critical to my ministry and what I get to do. And they're also critical to what we get to experience each and every day during the school year. So those four things that I'm thankful for, one is my gym that I get to go and work out in. It's D1 in Athens. So thankful to be a part of that community. It is a gym that is more than just kind of going into a place where you lift weights and that sort of thing. It's really, we call it our D1 family, and it really is a family. It is fun to go. I think what I love most about it is the fact that the core values that D1 has align with my core values as a person. And since going to D1 in late May, early June, I weighed 240 pounds at that point. And as of, well, let's just say pre-Thanksgiving meal, I've lost right at 39, almost 40 pounds. Feel better, best shape of my life. Very, very thankful for D1 and my coaches there. Love those guys. I'm also thankful for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. FCA is the organization that I work for, have been on staff with them for 8.5 years, and have had multiple roles within this ministry. But I love our mission of leading every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. And there's so many different layers when it comes to FCA and what we do and the number of people that are involved. And as I think about FCA, I think about my home team. The home team is the group of people that God has put together to support us financially on a monthly or a recurring basis. And I can't do what I do without their support. And I can't really go down the list and start naming everybody, because it's a good sized list. But people are generous and they're sacrificial. There are individuals, there are businesses, there are churches that all are a part of the home team that help to fuel the ministry that happens in Northeast Georgia. Being able to serve over 35 staff, 27 counties, the number of coaches and athletes in this area is huge, and the mission is great. And so for my home team, I'm just so, so, so thankful for their generosity and their support and their faithfulness in giving. So D1, FCA. The third thing I'm thankful for is my church. I love my church. Lisa and I started attending Bethlehem Church back in 2019, and we have we just love our church. We love our pastor. We love our staff. We love the worship. We love the teaching. We love the people. We love our commitment to community. We love the fact that we're focused on giving hope and sharing the gospel with the world. And it is just, for us, it has probably been the most healthy church we've ever been a part of in our 27 years of marriage and ministry. And we're just grateful. We're grateful for how God has blessed our church and how God is using Bethlehem Church in ways that really, and as I was reading in my Bible this morning, just about how God's ways are unfathomable. You cannot measure the work of God. And if you tried to measure the work of God, it would be putting God in a box, and God doesn't fit in a box. And I'm just grateful that God's doing something immeasurably more than I could ever think of or imagine when it comes to our church and our church family. So I'm thankful for our church. I'm thankful for Westminster Christian Academy, where Lisa teaches, and where Elizabeth, our 16-year-old, where she attend school and play sports. And I'm thankful for our coaches. I'm thankful for the leadership. I'm thankful for the teachers, the community, the culture. I'm thankful for the kids. I'm thankful for the opportunity that I get to coach some of those kids. And I'm thankful that Lisa is valued there and is given the opportunity to grow and to lead and to serve in her school. And it's those four things to me, as I think about that question, what am I thankful for? I think about those four things and how, and the impact that they've had on my life and on my family. And so anyway, I'm just thankful. So I know today's workout was incredibly hard today. So at D1, and but hey, there are no hard things. You're not going to grow. So thankful for hard. What are you thankful for, Lisa?
Well, those that you named, I would also be thankful for. But making my own list, I'd have to say first would be my faith in the world we live in and the day and the times, talking about hard. My faith is what sustains me, my faith in Jesus Christ. That's what gives me purpose for living. It gives me hope no matter what circumstances are. And so I really don't understand how people make it without faith in Jesus Christ. Second would be family. And, you know, it's just a different season with two that are adults and living outside of our roof. One that's still here, but well into the teen years. So it's just a different season, but I'm thankful for this different season and the times that we spent together. Yesterday was super sweet to have the boys and then be with your family as well and just sit around the table. That's one of my favorite things to do, and enjoy a meal and talk and catch up. So family. And then right after that, I'd have to say would be friends. And many of our friends we consider like family. We even tell them that they're like family. Mm-hmm. But just a lot of friendships that we have that Our paths have crossed for so many different reasons, maybe even, you know, through the organizations and the places you were talking about, maybe years and years ago. Maybe we don't see each other much, or maybe not even at all, but just I'm so thankful for friendships that we have had along the way, and that those that we still are in touch with today, and then those that are closest with us that do life with us and make it so much more enjoyable. Then last, I would have to say, would be my field. Did you like that? I was trying to do all
your
F's.
Field, man.
My alliteration.
Your alliteration.
My field, yes. My field of teaching that the Lord took me into later in life. Not really what I started out going to school for, or even upon graduating, was the field that I was interested in. But it's where the Lord directed me later, and I love it. I love being a teacher. Love the students, and you know, I was reminded this weekend, I saw a student in middle school now that I'd had, you know, in fourth grade, and so many times I see them out in places, or you know, those that I still keep up with as they move through the grades in school. It thrills my heart to see them doing well, to see them thriving, you know, just when they thank me for being their teacher, you know, way back in third and fourth grade. It thrills me. And I love what I do. I love to connect with each student that God puts in my path, in my classes, or coaching now through that avenue that I've had the opportunity to do. And I just, you know, I want to disciple them along the way. And I love being able to do that. So those are my big things I'm grateful for.
Well, your kids love you.
Well,
they love your stories.
Yes.
And we've got a great story lined up today. Can't wait. I'm really, really, really excited about our conversation today and what we're going to talk about. And I know that Lisa's got Christmas decorations on the brain. I've got podcast on the brain, and knowing that this is a powerful story, and it's something that we've been living through the last actually more than 10, 11 years. It's really been a lot longer than that, at least it has been for Lisa. So we're going to talk about that here in just a few minutes. But hey, before we do that though, what did you think about yesterday, Thanksgiving and Brasstown Valley and all that?
It was really nice. You know, I would say, even if you don't want to go on Thanksgiving, just the drive up there through the mountains, and it's winding road.
Yeah.
The kids laughed because, you know, Spencer taking the curves in the big old truck.
I took it easy.
Not super smooth, but it was definitely an adventure. But just a pretty drive in God's creation through the mountains and passing the lake. And it was just beautiful. Cooler weather up there. The lodge where we got to go in and have just a really nice meal. They had us our own private room with your parents and Wes and Suzanne and Ben and Abby. And we probably were there, what, almost 4 hours?
3-4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a nice day, a very nice Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. It was pretty
Excuse
cool.
Me.
I enjoyed it. And nobody fussed on the ride up or the ride back.
Well, we disagreed a little bit about music.
Well, we always disagree.
That's always.
About that.
Yeah. Everybody has to take turns.
Well, what are you most excited about for Christmas this year?
What am I most excited for about
Christmas? What are you
Christmas?
Most excited about this year for Christmas?
I don't know.
You don't know yet?
I'm really just excited for the trip after Christmas to Nashville.
That's, oh, okay.
That's what
All
I'm
right, you're just looking
about.
Forward to a little time away.
I didn't get that last year, so.
So, all right. So, what did you do this week? Let's just talk earlier this week. What did you do this week? Earlier this week.
I went to visit family in Greenville, South Carolina.
Greenville.
Mm-hmm. Spent a few days there because I knew we were having, you know, Thanksgiving down here with your family.
So in 2011, in the fall of 2011, Lisa found out that there was a potential match with her birth mother. Lisa was adopted when she was just a baby, and she has a story of reunification with her birth mother that we're going to unpack today. And so she was there this past week visiting family. But before we get to the story, I want us to talk a little bit about adoption. So Lisa, how old were you when you were adopted, and when did you realize that you were adopted?
So that's always been a question people ask you. When did you know that you were adopted? And I actually have heard stories and known people personally that did not find out, you know, until they were a certain age and they remember finding out. But honestly, I always knew I was adopted because I remember, especially mother reading us stories, books that she had bought that would talk about adoption, would talk about different ways families are made and the way God puts families together in different ways. And so I really did, just from a very early age, she would tell me that and would tell me bits and pieces of my story at age-appropriate times. So there was never a reveal of, oh, you're adopted. I just grew up knowing that.
So adoption is a part of your identity as a person.
Yes.
What do you think about adoption?
I think that it is God's heart. I think that earthly adoption, when we adopt children into the family, it is such a picture here on earth of what God does for us in sending His Son, that when we accept His Son, we are adopted into God's family. All the rights, all the privileges, everything that is Jesus's as God's Son is now ours.
So, what for you, what was it like growing up adopted?
Well, I mean, I can't say that there's any other side. Like, I just, it is part of who I am. And I was very proud that I was adopted. I do remember one time this boy at school, elementary, and he just did not understand. You know, I would say, well, I'm adopted. I don't look necessarily like my parents. And he would say, well, where's your real mom and dad? And I'm like, those are my real mom and dad. No, I mean, where's your real mom and dad? And he kept pressing and, you know, almost in a teasing, those aren't your real parents. I'm like, yes, they are. Those are my real parents. That's my real mom. That's my real dad. I don't know what you're talking about. And he just kept pushing me. And so I'd had enough. And I looked at him straight in the eye and I said, you know what? At least my parents chose me and wanted me. Yeah, I think I got in trouble for that. I'm pretty sure I did.
That's a pretty good comeback.
My mother explained to me, you cannot tell people that. Their parents want them, even, you know, born biologically to them. They want them, Lisa, just the same. So, yeah.
But that was a pretty good, that was a pretty good comeback, though.
Thank you. I did feel very special, you know, that I was specifically, you know, prayed for and wanted. I knew that my parents had requested a baby girl. You know, it's just, it's a neat feeling.
So how old were you when you were adopted?
I was only just a little over 2 months, about 2.5 months old when I was adopted. I was born in February, and May 3rd is Lisa Day.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's what we call it.
So did you ever wonder about your birth parents and who they were, where they lived?
Oh, yeah. I think it's pretty normal for, you know, as you get older to want to know your beginnings, to understand your beginnings, maybe your heritage, ancestry, things like that, was something that I was curious about. And again, my parents raised me with a very healthy view of adoption, very respectful for a birth mother and decisions she would maybe make. But yet, it's like, and I think I told you this before, I love puzzles. So it's like you have a 1,000-piece puzzle, and I love to sit down and just work for hours, and you do the edges, you know, with your border, and you've got the picture on the front of the box, and you find your pieces, and everything is done except one piece. And you can't find that one piece, and you look on the floor, is it under the chair, did it fall under the table, down in a crack, is it still in the box? You look all over, and you can tell what the picture is. You see the picture of the puzzle. It's a beautiful picture, and it's put together. There's just that one little thing missing. And that's probably how I would relate it. I didn't resent anything in my life. I'm super thankful for my mother and my father and the life that they provided for me, raising me to love the Lord, taking me to church from early age, and that being important in our family. Our faith. So it wasn't any resentment, but it was just a curiosity of wanting to know. And, you know, you go to family reunions and everybody says, oh, you look like your aunt so-and-so, and oh, you have your grandfather's eyes, and oh, you... I didn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm. Because you know? Your dad is
and
how...
And you're curious.
So your dad is how tall?
Oh, well, daddy was 6'6".
Yes, and you are...
5'2".
Yeah, so y'all ain't nothing alike.
But we do have blue eyes, Daddy and I.
Yeah, that's true. Y'all do have blue eyes, but.
Mm-hmm. But no, I was not tall and lean.
No. Just short and beautiful.
Thank you, honey.
Yes. Short and beautiful. So did you ever, so you obviously had those questions and that wonder mm-hmm. of who they were and where they were.
Yes.
But did you ever do anything about it? Did you ever start like a search?
Sure.
And how did your parents feel about that?
Oh, well, so years back, you know, as a teenager, I would talk about it. And I actually wrote an essay. I believe I was in high school mm-hmm. when I wrote, I'm sure I was. I was in high school and I wrote an essay about my birth mother. Didn't know anything. My parents told me what little information they knew. They knew she was a young girl in high school still. But, you know, in the early 70s and my parents going through this for the first time and no one in either of their families had done anything like this as far as adopting. You know, it was a very new thing for them. They didn't know what information to gather or ask questions, you know. So they told me just what they knew of my story, of what they went through and their process. And then actually when, you know, they went to get me and bring me home. But that was about all they knew. So I did, as I got, you know, older in high school, I remember the talk shows, Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael, those red glasses. Geraldo did one. Then even Oprah Winfrey. Oh, I wrote every one of them. I did. I wrote them all. This is who I am. This is where I live. I'd love to find out. You know, my parents are very supportive of this. This is not like a bad situation, but I'd just love to know. Could you help me? And they would do specific stories on, you know, reunions and matching birth families. But, yeah, nobody ever called me to do one. So that was about, you know, that was all the extent that I knew what to do.
Sure.
And even in college a little bit, you know, I'd maybe see something or read something, and the internet was coming on the scene. But I really didn't know where to start. It's kind of this, you know, wide open, many, a myriad of possibilities. Where did I even begin?
Right.
So I didn't, you know, I'd kind of tinker with it for a little bit and then put it down. Plus, I was busy with life.
Yeah.
High school, college.
When did you really begin to kind of dig in and start the search?
Well, I can remember after we got married and thinking, okay, we're going to have children. I don't know any family history. And my whole life, the pediatrician, I mean, they would ask my mom questions.
Right.
And mother would say, well, we don't know. She's adopted. And, you know, that even as an adult and me going to the doctor, they would say, do you have family history of this? Do you know if anyone else has ever had this problem? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know family history from birth family. So thinking down that line of thought, you know, that if we're going to have children, what if something was wrong and we need to know more family history? So that was probably.
So that would have been late, mid to late 90s.
Yes.
In terms of a timeline.
Yes.
You were just in your early 20s.
And I had, I need to go back and look at dates. I had found a South Carolina registry. I knew I was born in South Carolina. My birth certificate said Charleston.
Right.
But, which is super interesting because my parents never been to Charleston, you know. And so it just, it's really interesting the way, you know, they take my parents' names and type them onto my
birth certificate.
But mine is an amended birth certificate. It says that across the top of it. In fact, mother and I, we would order a couple of birth certificates, like driver's license and things. I needed it. And every time I would hope that they would actually pull my original one accidentally and send that one, you know, a copy of that one instead of my amended. But no, every time it was my amended birth certificate listing that my mother had me in Charleston. So I knew with the South Carolina registry, I could put my name in that, and they would send any non-identifying information, you know, if a match was ever made, then they would obviously let you know that as well. But they would give me non-identifying information, which is basically no names, no places. It would be like height, weight, hair color, things like that. Number of siblings, of birth mother, birth father, things like that. So I did receive, it was about a page typed of stuff, that type of information.
You remember some of the specifics that were non-identifying on there?
Well, yeah, like little bits and pieces. And I was like, well, she was shorter. I mean, she wasn't super tall, my birth mother. And she had brothers. I don't know if it told me how many. it said her father had actually served in one of the branches.
Military.
Yes. Didn't tell me which. Trying to think. Told a little bit about birth father, like maybe his occupation. I believe that his father was disabled somehow.
He had sisters. That would have been in the late 90s that you received that information.
Yes.
We had moved back from Florida and we were living in Watkinsville at that time.
Yes, we had Tyler. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no problems with that, right? And so again, you just get busy with life, and I kind of, you know, that's a little bit more of that missing puzzle piece, not mm-hmm. complete, but, you know, little things.
So what were you hoping for in this search of your birth mother or birth family? What were some of the things that you were hoping to discover?
Well, I think just hearing the beginning of the story. You know, obviously she was a teenager, but okay, what were the circumstances? And she carried me for 9 months. You know, what did she do during that time? And how did her family deal with all of this? Friends?
Mm-hmm.
And then I always said, if I could just talk to her, I would love to meet her one day. But, and I remember this in that essay, if I never got to ever see her, at least if the Lord just would allow me to talk to her and tell her that I loved her. I wasn't angry. I did not grow up feeling abandoned. Quite the opposite. I know it sounds, you know, maybe even a little selfish. I don't know how this sounds, but I feel extra loved, you know, to have had two mothers, in essence, one mm-hmm. that gives life and one that then gives me life on and on and on, continuing
right.
to raise me. So just to tell her that I did not have hard feelings. You know, questions, sure, but no resentment, no anger. She actually, you know, is a hero to me for what she did.
So in your search,
mm-hmm.
obviously it was a search that had been going on for a while, because you started as, in your teenage years, really just kind of writing about it, thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
then moving through the college years of, you know, sending in information to different, you know, broadcasts, looking for help. I can remember us having conversations about even talking about a private investigator
yes.
to do some
right.
background work,
research. Because that's kind of where you are. It's like there's not really much else you could do.
Did you ever lose hope in your search?
No. No. But I do think the Lord needed to get me to a place. He wanted to get me to a place, and that might have been what took a little longer, that I finally could be at peace saying, I trust you even if this never happens.
Hmm.
You know, I wanted it so badly. And, you know, almost, and this is wrong. So this is what I'm saying. I had to work through almost I love my parents. Like, I'm not mad I'm not mad at her for placing me up for adoption. I'm having the right attitude. God, I mean, can't again, I would watch these shows and all these people are like so angry and bitter and hatred and truly just messed up. And I thought, well, I'm not like that, so can't you just let me find her? Can't I have what I want? And I truly believe I had to get to a point that I said, you know what, God? If this never happens this side of glory, then it's okay because that's your plan. It had to be His will, not mine. Mm.
So you never lost hope, which that's awesome.
No, I didn't. Learned patience.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't ever remember ever hearing you lose hope. I never heard you talk about it. I always knew that there was a desire and a longing that existed. And personally, I kind of felt like, I don't know what to do. I felt almost hopeless or powerless to help. I just didn't know where to go. You mentioned that you had really kind of come to a point where you could get some non-identifying information from a particular agency, and that wound up really kind of being the end of the line when it came to the information and what you could do after that, right?
Right. So they could send you that typed up. I mean, it was no official, like you weren't getting copies of anything. This was just typed on a plain piece of paper, maybe I guess the letterhead. And this organization.
Remember the name of the organization?
Yes. And I found them through, you know, mother explaining they use this attorney. And I was through the Department of Children and Family Services. So Families and Children's Service, DFACS. Whatever it was called back then, I think it actually had a different name in the early 70s there in Greenville. But it now had come out from DFACS, and it was the organization's name was Compass of Carolina. But they housed records. Well, at one point, I even remember getting to some point about records, and there was a fire, and so everything was then put on microfilm or whatever, microfiche, you know, at the courthouse. I don't even remember what stage that was that I found that out. But anyway, at Compass of Carolina, they would put me in an internet database, and I would put as much information as I had, not very much, but, you know, baby girl born this day, this time, Charleston, South Carolina, at the Medical College of Charleston, you know, just what was listed on my birth certificate, said this was the doctor, you know, that's what I could give. And anyone that would search for any of those things, there would be matches, and then the more things that, you know, matched, then the greater, I guess, the possibility that
sure. it was.
Sure, it
increased the possibility.
A true match.
Now, did they ask you about putting your name down or something like that to be contacted in case there was?
I did. I mean, I put wherever we were living at that point, which I think was Watkinsville.
That would have been in Watkinsville.
Yeah, Concord Drive.
Late 90s.
And it it would have been my married name. Right.
Yeah.
And whatever phone number I had at that time, I don't, you know.
Right.
Right. But that's what you give them, and it's certified. You notarize it, certified, mail, blah, 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 and they keep it. You know, and enter all the information into the database. And if someone else ever searches and, you know, are looking for some of those or looking with that same criteria or information points, a match would be made.
So what?
But I waited and waited and waited.
Yeah. So what happened?
So we actually, I actually did that right around Jared being born.
So that would have
So that was like...
That was 2001.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe right before Jared. Again, I'm about to have another child. What if something's wrong? I really want to know this. So I'd finally gotten to Compass of Carolina right about that, right about 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I didn't lose hope, but it was also kind of like, yeah, this is like a needle in a haystack. I don't even have much information to give. So
basically there's a period of silence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more that can be done.
No.
Except just wait.
Yep.
And that's it.
And we were even told, you know, if you hire a private investigator and you find anything else, you could petition the court. But again, an attorney friend told me, it really is just up to the judge. The judge can say, no, I'm not opening your records.
Yeah, because this is a you didn't have open records.
No. And so it would be her rights based on the decision she made. And the judge could just say no.
No. Out of respect for the birth
mother. And we didn't have a medical reason. Right.
Right.
So that's why I just never really pursued that.
So, silence.
Mm-hmm.
Life goes on.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Raising two little boys.
Raising two little boys. We start an adoption process.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With our own.
Yes.
Family.
Which we had always said.
Well, you told me before we were married.
Right.
You told me that it was a dream of yours to be able to adopt a child.
Yes. That I wanted to do.
And we were...
Even if I could have, you know, biological children, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I hoped I would. And we were able to.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then the Lord just, you know, he never took that desire away. And
right.
I think it was a calling. And you were very open in dating and sharing your dad's story.
Yeah. Yeah, so, my dad's adopted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it would have been 2004 that we mm-hmm. really started the
yes.
process of adoption.
Because it took almost
2 years to the day
to bring her home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we adopted Elizabeth.
Yep.
In 2006, mm-hmm. February of 2006, I had to fly to China.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we have our family. So at this point, let's just still in this period of silence. And then after we adopted Elizabeth in 06, there was still a long period
yes.
of silence, another 5 years or so.
Oh, yeah.
And then in 2011, Tyler's 14, Jared's 10, Elizabeth is 6. You are in your first year of teaching.
Yes.
Third grade, and it was kind of a crazy time for us. I was in a new church. We were pretty involved in our community in which we lived in. And then on top of that, there's school, there's sports,
yes,
there's
all.
I mean, it was just a crazy, crazy period of life. For us, and then there's the call. There's the call. And I'm at the office, and there was a call that came in. It was a Friday, and it was on the voicemail. I had obviously been out or whatever, and I came back, and it was on the voicemail. And it was from this agency in South Carolina named Compass of Carolina. Well, at the time, I didn't really think anything of it. I didn't remember that that was the name of the agency that you mm-hmm. had communicated with
mm-hmm.
about... give, you know, requesting non-identifying information, putting your name down, wanting to be contacted. It did not register. I did not remember anything about that. So I looked up Compass of Carolina And I'm thinking, well, maybe this is just like somebody's like trying to raise money. They're trying to whatever. And I'm like, why are they calling here in Georgia? And I found out that this place is a is an agency that supports families in domestic violence situations. And I'm going, oh my goodness, this is what? I didn't know what to think.
Right.
So I just, I left it alone. I didn't call back. I didn't do anything. So left it sitting over the weekend. I came back into the office on Monday morning, almost first thing Monday morning, and their phone rang. I answered it, and it was the lady from Compass of Carolina. And this lady started asking me questions about you. And I'm like, ma'am, what is this in reference to? And she wouldn't tell me.
Right.
But she was wanting to talk to you. And I'm thinking, has somebody filed a complaint? Has, I mean, is there some domestic violence thing going on that I just don't know about? And somebody's accusing us? Or I had no idea. And she's wanting to talk to you. And I'm like, ma'am, you've got to give me more information before I release any information to you about my wife and where you can reach her. And she was like, okay, I see I'm really not getting anywhere, so I've got to give you something in order to get this ball moving down, you know.
You're a good gatekeeper.
And she, well, thank you. I said, ma'am, you're going to have to give me more information. What do you need to contact my wife for? And she said, we think we have found a match for her birth mother. I was silent. And then I was, I think I was silent for like, it felt like an eternity. But it probably wasn't. It was probably just really, really quick. And I'm like, I'll be right back. I said, you need to let me know, what is your name and what is your phone number? And I will have my wife call you immediately. Immediately. Key word. Immediately.
So, here, let's pick the story up.
Yeah, you want to pick it up from here?
I'm at school teaching 20-something third graders. And they have high school students that work in the office in, you know, teacher aid type stuff. And the office person, high school boy, came into the lunchroom. We were actually at lunch and gave me a little note message. He says, Mr. Bilev says it's not an emergency, but you need to call him. Okay, thank you. Well, we're at lunch. I'm opening ketchup and telling them not to mix their peas and their mashed potatoes, or they're going to eat them like that with hot sauce if they do that. So we go back to the room, and I forgot all about it. I'll call him, you know, when school's over. Got a few more hours left in the day. So I'm back in the room. We're getting our books out, and the phone is ringing. Well, I typically just ignore it, so I did let it ring. Well, then it just kept ringing and ringing, like the person is just going to hang up and call right back. So I pick the phone up. Hello? And it was you.
Yes.
And you said,
are you sitting down?
Yes. You said, I need you to sit down. And I said, okay, what do you need?
No, you said, yeah, right.
I said, I'm sitting down. What do you need?
I said, you need to sit down.
Which I was not sitting down.
Are you sitting down?
I'm busy.
I said, are you
teaching.
Sitting down?
And you were insistent. And I, so I pulled the chair. I sat down. I said, fine, what is it? You said it wasn't an emergency. So I knew, like, it's not, it can't be bad, but what in the world? I've got to teach these kids math. And you say,
I got a call.
I got a call today.
I couldn't even get the agency name out.
No, you said from Compass, and I said, they found my birth mom?
Yep.
And I started crying. And I remember, Ison and Jake were on the front row, and they were like, Miss Prelove never cries.
Yeah.
Should we go get the principal? Well, like, what do we do? They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, these bunch of third graders like seeing their teacher crying in the classroom.
I'm okay. On the phone.
On the phone.
It's okay. Just get your book out. It's fine. So I
bless her kid's heart.
The teacher aide to come in and sit with the kids, and you had given me Nicole's phone number, and I went into the tech lab and could use the phone in there
yep.
and call her. and her tell me that they had made a match.
So what happened after that call?
Well, a lot more waiting. Which I did not realize. I thought, this is it. Okay. Now we're good. And so what Nicole explained was that South Carolina law requires for reunification, both parties must do counseling. Okay, so I'm fine. I'm game. I can do that. She did say you can't go to your husband for counseling.
I wouldn't have been able to do
that. I wouldn't do that anyway. No, just kidding. So, no, I go to a completely separate third party. Yeah. So I was going to get counseling. And then she said, but then after that, and we have to receive paperwork, notarized, certified from the counselor, counseling session notes, then you have to wait 30 days before we can do anything else. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll get right on this. But Nicole explained that my birth mother was maybe a little more shocked at all of this and not quite as ready to move fast.
All right, so back up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Back up to what had happened on the file in terms of you putting your name down and your birth mother taking her name off. You remember that?
Well, I didn't learn that till later.
Till later?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned that actually when we looked at the timeline and we reconstructed the timeline of things, I had put mine on like right around Jared, I told you, like right around 2000.
Yep.
Her name, she actually had gotten to Compass of Carolina quicker than I had as a, you know, young adult. And she had her name on during the 80s and 90s, late 80s and 90s. And she took her name off based on their family circumstances at the time. And 2 months later was actually when I got to Compass of Carolina and found them and sent my paperwork and put my information in there. So she actually had hers there for many years when I was growing up and didn't know about Compass of Carolina yet. And then actually she removed her name based on what was going on with her family and children. And 2 months after her name came off was when mine went in. So there was no match. Then that's why mine then sat there for so long. Until she put her name and information back in September of 2011. And the match then, they called us the beginning of October.
Like almost immediately. It was
almost
crazy.
Immediately, yes.
Man.
Well, they were tracking me down because we had moved.
Yeah, and how they tracked...
Facebook.
Was it Facebook?
Facebook is what Nicole said. Mm-hmm. And connections, Facebook got to you trying to reach me.
Mm-hmm. Social media.
I know. Thank goodness.
Wow.
That'll be the one time I was thankful for Facebook.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. Seriously. So you did your counseling pretty quickly.
I did.
And then there was a lot of waiting between that time and then through Christmas.
Well, I went back to Nicole. We were having some conversations. She was the counselor at Compass. And I said, all my stuff is done. I'm ready. And she said, well, the 30 days doesn't start till the second party has their paperwork turned in. And she said, I spoke with her and she just asked if you would be patient. She wanted to get through Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, holidays. And then she said for me to call her again in January. And so I did. I asked Nicole if she would give her a message. Again, I'm not sure what was proper. I don't know if she was supposed to do this, but I begged her, please, would you just give her this message and tell her I will wait. I've waited a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I can be patient. And I told Nicole, tell her that during this time of waiting, I'll be praying. I'll be praying for her, for her family. I didn't know what her situation was, you know.
Right.
And this is a lot, I guess, to process and navigate.
So now we're in 2012.
Yes.
We're in 2012, January, February-ish, mm-hmm. somewhere in there.
January, Nicole called me back and said that birth mother had completed her counseling and sent papers, and they had everything, and our 30 days started.
Started.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're on the call number two, part two, February 2012.
Yes.
You had a phone call that you have been waiting on your entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as I can remember, yes.
What was that call like?
So, first of all, it was Nicole calling on that 30th day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, afternoon. On the 30th day. And she said, I can give you a first name and a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
If you still want to do this. And I said, yes. She said, well, birth mother said she was wanting to proceed as well. So I'll tell you, her first name is Kathy. And here's her phone number. And she requested that since you work, you call her.
Hmm. So you called her. You called Kathy.
Yes.
And that was after you kicked everybody out of
yes,
the bedroom.
And locked the door
and said, do not come in here.
Call 911 if something happens.
But yeah, right.
Don't bother mommy.
Yeah. It was like everybody was threatened.
Yeah.
Within an inch of their mm-hmm. life had anybody interrupted that phone call.
And
so,
it really is. It's, you know, like you said a while ago, time almost stands still. And it's like this surreal, out of body experience. I don't know. I know that sounds hokey, but it was like, it just was frozen for a moment as you dial those numbers and you wait
mm-hmm.
for the voice.
Mm-hmm.
She said, hello. And I said, is this Kathy? And she said, yes, is this Lisa? Because they had given her my first
uh-huh.
name. And then we both just were crying.
Hmm.
You know, emotional for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long. And then...
Well, it wasn't a long conversation, if I remember correctly.
No, it wasn't. But I just, again, it was like time was just frozen right there. And I said, though, I need to tell you something before we talk about anything. Since I've waited so many years to do this, this has been a prayer of mine that I would get to talk to you. If I never see you, I need to tell you this. And I said, you're my hero. What you did was selfless in thinking of me first, not you, not anybody else, not parents' wishes or what. And again, I didn't know the whole story, but you put me first to think what was best for the child. And I want you to know I'm thankful that you did that. I have no resentment, no anger, no bitterness. I want you to know I have a wonderful mother and father. I love my mother and daddy deeply. They have been the perfect parents for me. They raised me to love the Lord. I'm a believer. And I just needed you to know that. Hmm.
You remember anything she said?
Yes. She said, no, I'm not a hero. I don't ever think of myself like that. She said, your parents are heroes in the story. They took a child that wasn't their own flesh and blood and raised you mm-hmm. and obviously did a great job raising you. So, it's different perspectives.
Yeah. So what happened after that? Like the phone call?
Well,
there was the, okay,
then we both then said, right, we both said, and it was almost kind of like we're both at the same time, so do you want to meet? And you're kind of asking hesitantly, but hoping, please, yes, they'll say. And both of us were like, yes, absolutely. I wouldn't have done this phone call if we weren't going to go further than this. So then it was like, I really don't know how you do this. I don't know that I've ever known anybody to do this.
Right.
How do you go,
how do we go about
meet
doing this?
Your birth family mm-hmm. member? And so, I mean, you're always my sounding board. So she said, well, we need a date and a place. Mm-hmm. And so, again, she just put the ball in my court and she said, you call me back. If this is what you want to do, you talk to your husband, you call me back. So we really didn't talk anything else. Because it was almost like, and we say this now, we just wanted to save everything else. I know you thought I was crazy. You're like, well, why didn't you talk longer? I mean, that wasn't a long conversation. But really, truly, it was like we were just saving everything else we wanted to say till we saw each other in person.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was like, did you get the last name?
No.
Did you get, no, y'all didn't get nothing.
No. I didn't ask any questions. I don't know. Plus, your mind's going, it's all jumbled and running a million miles to nothing.
So we decided to meet.
Yes, kids with ball games and different things going on in school. It was going to be like the next weekend, maybe two weekends.
I think it was two weekends,
right. It was going to be in two weekends. It was going to be March the 2nd.
Yep, March the 2nd.
On a Saturday.
And it was a Friday. It was during school. It was a school day.
Yes, it was.
It was a school day.
You're right. I was going to take off.
Yep.
That way the kids were taken care of.
Yep.
You're right. It was Friday, March 2nd. We would get them to school, and then we could head out. And, we're like, do you meet in a park? It's kind of chilly that time of year. And what if it's bad weather? But you don't ask them to come to your house, and we don't go to their house. You want kind of neutral, but you want a feeling of home. Where else?
Cracker Barrel.
They have rocking chairs on the porch. It's like home and a fireplace. So I called her back. Again, very brief, phone call of, okay, how about Friday, March 2nd? The kids will be in school, so we'll have all of that time until we have to go back and pick them up. And we'll meet you at Cracker Barrel in Commerce. I knew she was Greenville. She would, come that way and we would go mm-hmm. from Athens. So it'd be a good meeting spot. And we were also thinking, I don't want to run into everybody and their brother. I wanted it to be just us for that time to meet. It was a great place to meet.
It was. I remember when we were driving over there, I'm mm-hmm. like, all right, do you know what she's wearing?
Nope.
Do you know what they're driving?
Nope.
Do you know, what does she look like? Did you get a picture? Did
nope.
you get anything?
Nope.
And what, you know, and then I was like, well, how are you going to know who they are?
What'd I say?
I'll know.
Mm-hmm. I'll just know.
I'll just know. Mm-hmm. And we drove up into, we drove into that parking lot, and Kathy and Keith were already sitting on the front porch in the rocking chair, and we saw them, and I think you said, there they are.
Mm-hmm. I think I almost got out of the truck before it stopped.
Yeah, I think you did.
Rolling.
Almost. You were anxious to get out of that truck.
I hadn't slept the night before. I was so nervous.
So we went to the Cracker Barrel in Commerce, and we were there at Cracker Barrel for a while.
Yes, I think, well, there was a shift change. The little waitress that we started out with told us that she, it was time for her to leave, but someone else would still help us if we needed anything. So, yeah, we were there five.
It was there 6 hours.
6 hours, yeah.
We were at the Cracker Barrel before lunch.
Yes. We ate a breakfast.
During the lunch.
We ate a lunch.
During the lunch
crowd.
And
we had to be back to pick kids up from school.
And then we saw the senior adult group come in
early
for
dinner.
Early dinner.
Mm-hmm. Just talking.
And we just got lost in time. And I can remember sitting down, and I'm looking at Keith. Keith and I are looking at you and looking at Kathy, and we're going, we're dumbfounded. We're absolutely dumbfounded at what we are witnessing before our very eyes, to see a birth mother and her daughter reunited some, how many years?
Almost 40.
Almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. Almost 40 years since your birth. And to see your mannerisms, your looks, your the way you move your hands, your heights, everything. Keith and I, we're speechless at what we are witnessing and what we witnessed before our very eyes. It was, I still have no words. You know, all these, you know, these years later, I still have no words to really describe what we experienced that day, other than it was just amazing to see God bring you and her back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to see the genetics.
Yes. I mean, nature just, versus nurture. There's a lot of nature.
It was incredible.
You can't escape it.
Well, that was the first meeting. But then there's the second meeting with the family.
Yes. So I took pictures and showed her pictures of our kids, talked about adopting Elizabeth, wanted them to meet the kids and everything. But again, I think she was still a little bit, you know, reserved at this point and had not said anything to her family about what she was doing.
That's right. They didn't know they were coming to Commerce in order to meet you.
They did not.
Nobody knew.
No. She had kept that between
her and Keith.
Mm-hmm. So, after that, I kept saying, well, you know, I'd like to meet the rest of your family. I want you to meet mine. So, they did. They came to soccer game, saw our kids, drove up this way. I mean, it was super sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That was Keith doing.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah, Keith.
And I'm
initiated
thankful for that.
That.
Yes. And I'm thankful. You know, because we were in this.
Y'all didn't know what to do.
Do I call every other day, or is that too much? Do I call once a week?
Right.
Or is that annoying? Like, yeah, no one knew what to tell us. Even the counselor that both of us went to, they've never seen this before.
Yeah, y'all had to figure this out.
We were just, right, figuring it out as we went, trial and error. So it was, yeah, in the beginning, it was probably a little awkward, you know, and it was kind of call and small talk. But I would say, well, have you told anybody? No, not yet. It's just not the time, you know. And, but so now I know she has several other children.
Mm-hmm.
The two youngest are away at college.
Right.
During this spring semester. And she kept saying, I want to tell them. I want you to come. I want you to meet. But we were busy with school and all of our kids' activities anyway. So we decided the first time we could go to Greenville would be right after school.
Yep.
Got out. We need to finish all the school stuff, post-planning. All the athletics would be over. And we could go June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be her parents, Papa and Granny.
Yep.
Their 61st anniversary, wedding anniversary. And she said, I'm just going to have a lunch at the house. So y'all plan. Everybody will be here. My brothers, their families, you know, everybody. Her other children. Y'all plan to come. I'm like, okay. Well, I kept talking to her and saying, now, did you tell anybody? No, I haven't told anybody yet. Well, now we're coming soon. I know. I'll figure out when I'm going to tell them. I'll figure it out. Well, Kyle and Kelsey were coming home from college. And we're going to be home that weekend as well. And so I remember her sending me a text middle of the night after they told Kyle and Kelsey. Mm-hmm. They sat up real late one night and told them. And she sent a text that said, Kyle and Kelsey can't wait to meet their sister.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, they're all right with it. They don't think, who is this weird girl, lady trying to come into our family? Right, they're okay with it. So that went good. And I know that that had been a prayer, you know, of Kathy's, that her kids could, you know, understand. Mm-hmm. When she told them the story. And, you know, not think less of their mom, or, you know, you worry about
right.
things like that as a mother. So that was good. And then I know they drove up and told Jessica. She was living in North Carolina with her husband, Dan.
That's your other sister.
Yes. And that's the oldest sister. And told Jessica, and that went great. So the plan was still on for us to go June 1st for Papa and Granny's anniversary lunch at Keith and Kathy's house. So I talked to her. We get there and meet Kyle and Kelsey, and that was great. And I say, so have you told your parents? No, I haven't told them yet. But Kelsey had this idea. We just got a card, and everybody's going to sign the card, like everybody. And you sign it too, ever how you want to sign it, and we're going to give them the card, and then we'll tell them. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know. I hope this goes well. I mean, they're older. You know, you don't want to give anybody a heart attack. And okay, but you know your family. Oh, all right. So I signed the card down at the bottom. Happy anniversary. Love, your newest granddaughter. And then we just wait. Everybody starts arriving at the house. And
oh,
they announce, we're their friends from Georgia, just like it's, you know, there's our friends from Georgia. Those are their kids.
I remember sitting on the couch, and Preacher John comes over next to me. He sits down next to me, this big hoss of a man.
He was tall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Hands. He sits down next to me.
In his overalls.
In his overalls. And he goes, how you know Keith and Kathy? I was like, uh-oh.
You didn't want to spill the beans,
did you? I didn't want to spill the beans.
So what'd you do?
I got up and went to the bathroom.
You hide out in the bathroom?
I had to leave. I was like, I don't know how to answer that question.
And we're in the kitchen. We're in the kitchen.
Yes.
With Granny, the kids, Jared, Lizzie, Tyler sitting on bar stools. Granny's asking questions. And Yeah, just like this is just a normal day and we're just some extra friends that came for lunch. So it gets to be lunchtime. House is full. People are standing in the kitchen, living room, around her big table.
Nobody's got a clue.
No.
About this. Uh-huh. Nobody.
And Kathy gives Papa the card and says, okay, well, we're here, you know, for celebrating Granny and Papa's 61st wedding anniversary. And here's your card. This is from everybody, so read it. Well, Papa gets a little ornery or agitated at things. And so he's like, oh, good grief, just let's say the blessing and eat. And she's like, well, we will in just a minute. Just hold on. Read your card. So he opens it, but he's reading it to himself. And she says, no, 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 out loud. Read it out loud. Well, then he gets, oh, for heaven's sakes, got to read the thing. So he starts reading it. And then he's just really, you know, glossing over it by having a blah, blah, blah. You know, okay, all right, let's eat. And she said, no, 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 no. Go back and read what people wrote. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Granny says, John, just do it. So he's got the card. Love so-and-so. Happy anniversary. We love you. Yay, you made it. Happy 60. Then he gets to the bottom. Happy anniversary. Love your newest granddaughter. And he's, okay, fine. I'm done now. I read it. And she said, read that last one again. Now, I'm standing right beside Granny, and Papa John was in a chair next to Granny, and Kathy was on the other side of her daddy at this point. But then she comes over and she stands beside me when she says, read that last one again, Daddy. And he said, oh, for Pete's sakes, I read it. It said, happy anniversary, love your newest granddaughter. I don't understand, Carolyn. And he's like, gives the card to Carolyn. He goes, is somebody having a baby? And Kathy turns me around, kind of facing them. And she said, nobody's having a baby, Daddy. But I had a baby almost 40 years ago. And this is her, Lisa. And tears.
Oh, yeah. They want to dry.
A scream. I just remember, you know, different voices and squeals and laughter and gasps.
Yep.
And again, for a moment, time just stood still.
It did.
Granny hugged me.
Yep.
Papa sat back down in the chair.
Yeah, he had to have a seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had to soak that in.
It was awesome.
You remember what he said after he stood back up?
Mm-hmm. He took my hands.
Yeah.
So I'm looking up at him. And big hands.
Yeah.
Big hands. And he's got my hands in his. And one of his on the bottom and one on the top just clasping mine. And he stooped over and I'm looking up at him. And he says, Lisa, I pray for you every day of your life. He said, I started out when you're that little baby and I prayed that you would grow. I prayed that God would give you a mother and a father that would take care of you, teach you about the Lord Jesus, take you to church, provide everything you needed. Then when you were a toddler, I prayed that, you know, God would keep you safe as you learn to walk and move around and protect you. I prayed then as you go into school that you would learn, that you would trust in Jesus as your Lord and Savior. Said then I prayed as you were a teenager, God again would protect you, keep you safe, mature you. I prayed as a young adult that you would find the person that God wanted you to marry. He would be the right man to treat you right. You would be a good wife for him, that you would have children, if the Lord allowed. He said, I never knew if I would see you this side of heaven. But he said, I knew one day I'd see you.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
And then 10 days later, 9 or 10 days later, We got to hear him preach.
Yep. Yep.
That was pretty cool.
At the church where
he pastored.
Mm-hmm, started.
Man, we could talk another hour or more just about Preacher John.
Yeah.
And his life and ministry and
yep.
Golly. So, what has life been like for you since meeting the whole family?
That puzzle piece is in there.
Yeah, the puzzle piece is in there. Yeah.
I know the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it was a sweet beginning because I was prayed for from the very beginning. And
yep.
That from the very beginning, God, you know, he was working and he was weaving my story.
Yep. So you Mama Kathy had you in Charleston.
Yes.
But where was she?
She stayed at a home for unwed mothers, which I did at one point get that far, realizing that she had been there. I didn't know how long, the Florence Crittenden home. And you actually drove me there one time when
did.
We took a trip to Charleston.
Yep.
It was a short trip one time, I think, for an anniversary getaway. And mm-hmm. You actually drove me by. It's just a house in like the little suburb right
yep.
outside of downtown Charleston. And it's a home where
yep.
girls, and it's still used as that, girls, women can come and stay that need a place when they're pregnant.
So there's so much more that we could talk about, and there's so many different layers.
Yeah.
There's so many different layers to this particular story. And each person, whether if it's your family,
uh-huh.
your parents,
yes,
or your brothers and sisters,
yes,
the aunts, the uncles,
yes,
our kids, people that are our friends that they've walked this journey with
mm-hmm.
you and us. Everybody has this different perspective.
Uh-huh.
And so there are so many different layers to this, but I think, you know, as far as the layers go, your story, Mama Kathy's story, Keith's story, even though Keith is not your birth father.
Right.
He's
but he
practically,
loves me like
he
his own.
Loves you. Well, I mean, he calls you a daughter.
And I couldn't have imagined that.
He calls you his daughter.
Like, that's a piece I never imagined.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful.
He loves
for
you as
yes.
his own.
Yes.
And, you know, as a husband, to see it all unfold.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very difficult to wrap my mind around.
Yeah.
But it's been one of the greatest joys of my life in seeing it happen.
Uh-huh.
So as we kind of wrap up the conversation for now.
Yes.
What have you learned through this whole experience from the search and the reunification and now, because there's been so much that you've been able to experience with the family, from travel to wedding, you know, directing your sister's wedding to, you know, you name it. There's been so much that you've been able to do and be mm-hmm. involved in.
What have I learned?
Yeah. What have you learned through all of this?
I think the biggest thing would be just that God's timing is perfect.
Mm.
And going back to, you know, how I started and saying I needed to get to the point that I was at peace with whatever God chose, in His sovereignty. And, you know, I know it doesn't happen for a lot of people. I'm not naive that, you know, everybody's story would be like this. But that was His plan for my story. And I'm thankful for that. And I wouldn't change it. People say, well, don't you wish maybe if you'd met her earlier, you know, she could have been a part of your life longer, or even Papa John because he passed away
right now,
you know, or Granny when she was younger and doing the things that you and Granny would love to do together, like go to the beach, you know. But no, God's timing is perfect. It happened exactly when it needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For all of us to, you know, be in the right place. And I just, yeah, it couldn't be any better. I don't believe.
Hmm. So a couple more questions about adoption.
Yes.
What counsel would you give to those people who are adopted? Who are adopted and may deal with a lot of the same questions, concerns, fears, searches. Not every story winds up like yours.
No,
a lot of times,
I know that.
They, you know, it's horror stories that you hear.
My sister.
Yeah.
Yes.
What counsel would you give to those who are adopted?
I always think it's healthy to, you know, to talk about your story, to talk about what you know with someone else. Share your story. I think there's healing a lot of times that comes from sharing, and it can help others. So I would say, you know, be proud that that's a part of your story. Not everyone can say that. And maybe it wasn't a great situation, but again, if you can rest in the fact that it's a bigger plan than you. It's a bigger plan than a girl or a teenager or a young couple. It's not a mistake ever, that God is working. And if you can see that from the very beginning of your story, that He's working, then I think that just really helps your perspective. But I think celebrate that you're adopted. I think counseling is a great thing to process, and finding someone, and I'm always willing to talk and help people process through. I've done that a lot over the years as an adoptee and as an adoptive mom. So there's lots of different perspectives there.
That's good. That's good. And you do come at it from a lot of different angles, a lot of different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. I think openness is a good, so finding someone you trust that you can, and you know, even mother and daddy, like, were just always very real with me, you know, and listening when I said, I don't look like anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real hurt sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who I look like. I don't know whose eyes I have. I don't know whose hair color.
We do now.
The apple didn't fall far from the tree.
No, it did not. No, it didn't. We'll post a picture on our Court of Three Instagram page and let you see exactly how much they do look alike. All right. One last question.
Okay.
What counsel would you give to people who are interested in adoption?
I would say that talk to those people that you know have walked that road. Again, there's many different avenues of fostering to adopt, international, domestic, open, closed. I'm just a person that I like to gather lots of information. That's just my personality. So that's going to be my counsel, that, you know, talk to as many people as you can, interview agencies, or I know there are just adoption attorneys that's what they do. I have friends that do that. Put yourself out there. Let people know what you're doing. Let people pray for you. Gather a support group. That was crucial for us when we were adopting Elizabeth. And now, knowing my story, it was crucial for Mama Kathy. She had a support group, her church family, close family friends, you know, people that can walk this with you, that can encourage you, that can lift you up when you're down, that can meet needs, maybe even financially or just in other tangible ways as you walk through the process. Mm-hmm.
So, Lisa, how can people reach you if they have questions for you? Can they reach out to you on Instagram? Is that okay?
Sure.
And your Instagram name is, and Lisa's going, I don't know what my IG is. I ain't got a clue. Her Instagram is at BreedLoveLisa.
Yes, that's it.
At BreedLoveLisa is her Instagram.
Yes. They can profile. Also message me on Facebook. It's
fine. Oh, you doing that?
I do that.
Yeah, you can message her on Facebook.
I'm old school.
Lisa BreedLove. Or you can always email us at.
Yes.
The Chord of Three, THECORDOF 3, the number 3, at gmail.com. Well, thank you for joining us on the Chord of Three podcast. Lisa and I both hope that you and your families have a very, very Merry Christmas. We love you and are grateful for you. And until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you and give you peace.